Hello world, welcome to another episode of What Is. On today's episode, we'll be discussing the topic of coming out. What is coming out? And today's interview is with one of my friends that I met during a play, while doing a play, Charlie Baker. Charlie Baker identifies themselves as a transgender non-binary person. In this episode, not only do we talk about their experiences and their own struggles, but we also discuss some really cool topics like masculinity, the meaning of family, the internal conflict within the LGBTQ community, their top surgery, the use of the singular they, and picking your right conversations when trying to explain to people that don't understand the LGBTQ community or what it is to come out. So let's jump in and listen in to this interview. I had a great time recording it, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it as well. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to the show, What Is. Thank you for joining us on this episode of What Is.
Thank you for having me.
I thought it'd be really cool to have you on this episode where today we're talking about coming out, about showing yourself to the world and being proud and happy about who you are in different angles. You know, and before I give any introduction or talk about anything, I'd love for you to just tell us your story and what you went through, where you come from, and how your coming out process was all about.
For sure. And there's lots of types of coming out. And to preface this, I'll say that I am not a gay man. One of my favorite fun facts, like whenever you go around in a circle and you say a fun fact about yourself, is that I used to be a lesbian in Oklahoma. because I am transgender. And that means that I was assigned female at birth. I was born, and my mom says, is it a boy or is it a girl? And I was so big that the doctor said, it's a moose. Quickly followed up by, it's a girl. They were wrong.
They didn't know.
Well, but it's really funny because, like, apparently whenever I was born, like, there was a dimple on the bottom of my spine that the doctor had only seen on boy babies. Mm-hmm. When I was, like, 2 and 4 years old, I was correcting my aunt that I wasn't her niece, I was her nephew. Mm. And so I did not have the word for trans because I'm from Dallas, Texas.
Yep.
And the only trans men that I knew about were the pregnant man on Oprah and Boys Don't Cry, the Hilary Swank movie, mm-hmm. which is a great movie, but it's also victim pornography and it's a very negative narrative for a trans masculine person. Yep. And so trans meant man in a dress for me growing up. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I had these feelings. I knew that it made more sense for me and my brain to have a beard and pecs and muscles than the body that I had at the time. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I did have that until I passed something shiny or reflective and continuously saw, like, the same stranger in the mirror. So, asked myself in college for the first time, am I transgender? Immediately knew the answer was yes and started backpedaling really fast because I wasn't ready to deal with that.
Yeah.
Actually, it was the MI program at Second City where I finally asked myself for the second time, because it was the, like, second to last week of the writing portion. Mm-hmm. And the challenge was something like, find something scary for you, or, like, do something that's actually risky. And I thought, what am I actually legitimately scared to write a piece about? And it was my own gender identity. And so it was really through that, around the age of 25, that I began to accept that I was trans non-binary, which means that I'm transgender, but acknowledge that it's a spectrum, and so I don't tick one box or the other.
Gotcha.
And yeah, went on hormones, or went on a hormone, testosterone, on August 27th, 2016. There it is.
Got it.
And having my top surgery on September 4th of this year.
That's awesome. That's a perfect start to us knowing all about you, but there's so many layers there. There's so many questions that I have. Like, so you said that from the age of 2 to 4, you already were correcting your aunt about calling your nephew. So how was that, like, process through, like, growing up? Like, did you always know that there was something, like, you didn't feel comfortable in your body? Did you, like, talk to your parents about it?
I did not talk to my parents about it. And what was really hard, too, is that so often being trans was described as being, quote, trapped in the wrong body.
Right.
And I didn't feel trapped inside of another body.
Okay.
It was just one of those situations where I identified with men's fashion, looking at fitness magazines and looking at the two different types of bodies.
Right.
The one that I aspired to have was the men's bodies, not the women's.
Yeah.
And so I didn't feel imprisoned in my own body. Whenever I wasn't looking in a mirror, I couldn't describe myself to you. To be honest, I still really can't.
Right.
I have lots of issues holding people's names and holding people's faces. Mm-hmm. And I think for me personally, it's because I had such an issue for a long time connecting to my own face and connecting to my own name. My name was the sound of syllables that I learned meant me, and my reflection or my image was the exact same thing that I saw every time. Yeah. But at no point did I ever have that self-recognition of like, oh, that's me in that photo. I just learned, oh, my hair looks like that. Oh, that must be me. Or like, oh, I also grew up very fat. And so I would just kind of look for the heaviest girl in the photo.
Really? And you wouldn't be able to recognize yourself?
Not really. And actually, it's really funny now looking at old photos of myself. There's no spark of, in lots of young, like adolescent and adult photos of myself, younger mm-hmm. adult photos, mm-hmm. there's no sense of internal recognition of that's a photo of me. And also hearing, because I'm a singer-songwriter,
yeah.
and I have lots of songs recorded of me pre-T, mm-hmm. you could play it for me and I wouldn't know it was myself, with the exception of I remember recording the song.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's bizarre. And yeah. that's one of the harder things to, to communicate with people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it doesn't bother me, but most other people get kind of wigged out about that.
Right, right. But what about today? Like today when you take a photo or today when you see yourself, do you recognize yourself more?
Yes.
Do you, okay.
As soon as I see my reflection, I'm like, this makes sense.
This is what I pictured when I thought of myself, right?
It's gorgeous. It's
yeah.
such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
There's going to be lots and lots of happy crying after top surgery.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of time shirtless that
yeah.
all my roommates and everyone in my life can deal with.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did people ever ask you that question? Like, did your parents ever ask you that question? Do your friends around you, do you share that feeling of not, like, recognizing yourself or not connecting with your name with anybody apart from, or do you just, like, say that it's a phase or this is just something that I don't understand and no one can understand it, but, like, what was it, like, confusing? Was it...
In the terms of before I transitioned
yes.
and looking at myself,
yes.
I mean, it was one of those I didn't have, because there was not a trans narrative available to me, I didn't have the words to know what I was feeling was dysphoria or what I was feeling was discognition,
right.
as it were.
Right.
And so I might have shared some feelings of self-loathing that I had had,
right.
But it's one of those things that I think lots of people that do grow up queer, because I was socialized as a lesbian in Texas,
right.
and so, you know, I had crushes on girls growing up. Before I knew that I was having crushes on girls. And so I think it was just that sort of thing where I would share these thoughts and ideas mm-hmm. and not realize the things I was saying or thinking.
Right.
A story that my mom used to really love to tell is apparently one day I came home from kindergarten and said, hey mom, you know whenever a really, really pretty girl walks in the room and your heart just stops? Which is adorable.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't know what that meant as a
yeah,
kid. I just
yeah.
knew that there was a pretty girl in my
oh,
class
God,
that apparently
my heart
I had
just
a crush
stopped.
On.
Yeah.
And so, like, I would, there was one friend, one or two friends that later on in life, or maybe in high school, I would share my feelings of dysphoria.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't know, dysphoria means, or gender dysphoria means the alienation of one's own feeling of one's body in regards to gender.
Yeah.
If those words make sense?
It does, yeah.
Okay.
no, that definitely does. And so... What was your first interaction with somebody that, like, you were like, okay, that's what trans is all about. It's not a man in a dress. It is a whole, like, spectrum. It's a whole understanding of what I really am. Was it, like, did you have a conversation? Did you see, like, media that helped you understand that better? What was that?
It was definitely a process. The two things that I know that helped me a lot were YouTube. Finding trans guys on YouTube and seeing that I could have a quote-unquote normal life.
Yeah.
Because Even before I came out as trans in high school or middle school, whenever I thought about, do I want to transition, I knew the answer was yes, but I always told myself, oh, it's too expensive, it
mm-hmm.
takes too much time, and that's too hard of a life that I don't want to live.
Right.
All of which were just excuses to stop myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw on YouTube, particularly a trans bodybuilder, Aiden Dowling, that also started his own clothing company.
Okay.
And I saw that I could have the body that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has a wife. He has a child on the way. I saw that I could have a quote-unquote normal life.
Right.
And that I wasn't... Because, you know, the trans narrative that I had growing up was never positive. And then
mm-hmm.
beyond that, for me personally, I met a friend of mine that is no longer with us named Adrian Frazier. And Adrian was a trans non-binary dude in Chicago who also got me hired and trained me at Starbucks where I work
mm-hmm.
now. And he showed me his bottle of testosterone. He showed me his shots, said, I go to Howard Brown every couple of months, pay $50.
Yeah.
I do this once a week. And he was really the first person that made things seem possible.
Yeah.
And whenever I was beginning my journey, he was the person that I would get to share things with.
Yep.
And unfortunately, last February, he overdosed on heroin.
Yeah.
But as far as...
I'm sorry.
It happens.
Yeah.
Chase dreams, not dragons.
Right.
You know?
That's beautiful. Like, it took me a second, but I was like, that's... Wow, okay.
He had that tattooed on his arm. He
really?
Was... actually, he was a former heroin addict himself prior to that, but he had been clean for 5 years, and then he just had a really shitty 40 days. And sometimes that's all it takes. Whenever you are in the LGBTQ community,
yeah.
you kind of get used to losing people,
really?
Which is a really shitty thing to say.
No, that's
that's
like you say that as in passing, like it's like normal, like
mm-hmm.
it's normalized in so many ways, but that's not like that's got to hurt every time. Like that's got to like you go through. Pain and suffering, and
yeah.
so in a narrow-minded world sometimes that we live in, people don't see us the way we want to see them, and like for you, you constantly face a battle almost every day, but then
yeah.
you also lose the people that understand you, accept you, make you feel part of a community. So it's like, it's got to be like a double like slam in the face, you know, every time that happens, you know? Like
I mean, it definitely is. Any time that I see a trans statistic on the news, that's not a statistic to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's my community. It's my people.
Yeah.
And so there is a like a kind of double whammy as it is a personal loss, but death is not unfamiliar with me. Like Adrian is one of three deaths that I dealt with last year.
Oh my God.
Two of them were overdoses. One of them was just random. The universe decided it was their time to die. And so, you know, like I could be angry. I could feel loss in ways that destroy me, but instead I choose to do things that I feel would make Adrian laugh, or make
mm-hmm.
Adrian proud.
Celebrate them. It's good.
Yeah,
yeah,
they were such a loving and happy person.
Yeah.
And like they worked at my Starbucks for 2 years before I worked there.
Yeah.
And people still talk about them.
Yeah.
It's like the kids loved them.
Yeah.
Dude, like they, my coffee shop very much functioned like a local coffee shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I feel it's kind of, I don't want to say obligation because no one has any obligation to do anything just because of how they were born or the identity for which they have. However, I feel that there is absolutely an opportunity in loss in community to take that loss and take that hurt and make it something beautiful and
mm-hmm.
not cheapen it and not get rid of it because you can't, but you can transform it and you can make it productive.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So then... When you did identify, when you did feel like, okay, I am a transgender male or non-binary person in this world, did you come out to people that didn't understand that, like your family, your friends, like from high school? Like, was
mm-hmm.
that a conversation you had? How was the reaction? Like, again, if you don't feel like talking about
it. I am very much an open book.
Okay.
And I am also a person that I answer pretty much every question, and if a question's ever insensitive, I work with the person on rephrasing it rather than
Perfect.
Just
okay.
shutting down.
Thank you, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Appreciate that.
For sure. I try to, you know, because I have been very fortunate in that while I've dealt with a lot of ignorance, I have not dealt with a lot of bigotry and a lot of hatred,
awesome.
At least from my family and my friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Strangers in Boys Town,
sure.
Because
sure, yeah,
there's
yeah.
lots of phallocentric misogyny from gay men, which is fascinating and a whole thing on its own. But for the most part, people have been pretty wonderful, and actually no one's been surprised, period.
Really?
Oh, I was so masculine growing up anyway. I mean, I was a butch little lesbian. So like the my dead name, or the name prior to me changing my name legally to Charles Henry Baker, was Carolyn Baker Beery. So
mm-hmm.
Baker was my middle name. I only changed it because Charlie Henry Beery is a little too bouncy.
Yeah.
But the joke in like high school and college used to be like, oh, Carolyn's a man. And not in a bad way, but
yeah,
just
yeah.
I was so masculine and
right.
presented as such.
Right.
And so I came out as trans and started going by Charlie, and every person, including my parents, were like, no, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Like my dad would call me Carl growing up sometimes.
Really?
I was a butch little kid.
Nice.
I think the funniest thing is the people who, because I'm an acting major. I really emphasize in Shakespeare, so I have lots of word nerd friends. Mm-hmm. And so lots of people try to say that they have issue with the singular use of the pronoun they.
Yep.
Which is, I have not quite found my elevator pitch as to why the grammatical excuse to not use they is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, it is.
Yeah.
What I did find is that a reason that I'm used to it is because in high school, when I had crushes on girls but was still presenting as a woman,
yeah.
I never wanted people to know that I was talking about having a crush on a girl, and so I started using a plural or a singular they back then.
Mm.
And I've talked to other queer people, other sexually queer people, not necessarily gender, and a lot of them had that same experience, which was interesting and kind of a reason why the grammatical excuse for singular they is bullshit,
because
we do it anyway.
Yeah.
It's just not usually a conscious choice tied to one person.
Right. Fair. So you're close to them then. They're still part of your life. You're still. Right.
My parents are flying up for my first week of recovery for top surgery.
Nice, really?
My
That's
mom
awesome.
Is going to be up here on her birthday, and so I'm actually throwing her a surprise party.
That's awesome.
And by I'm throwing her, I mean I'm going to be in bed, hopped up on drugs. So I'm going to have my friends come over and cook for her.
That's awesome. That's so beautiful. That's so cool. So having said that, though, you said that now in Chicago especially, you're a part of this community, this LGBTQ community, and not everybody has that support system that you were lucky enough to have.
No, not at all.
So do you sometimes feel like you have another family outside of your actual, like, God-given family, you know, like you...
Well, and I am very much a person where there's family and there's blood kin. My blood kin is very kind to me, and we have a relationship. However, the people that I consider my emotional family are the people that I tend to surround myself with. Because whenever you do grow up queer, I mean, when, in most cases, whenever a child of color comes home to their house, they come home to a family of that same color, a family that knows that struggle.
Mm-hmm.
When a gay kid or when a queer kid comes home to their family, 9 times out of 10, their family doesn't know, and their family's not been through that struggle. And so I was surrounded by people that didn't know what I was going through. I still shielded them from a lot because I have to deal with a lot of ignorance that they'll never have to face.
Right.
And I don't want them to worry more than they already do.
Right.
And so I would say that my blood family would be very hurt by this. And I acknowledge that, but it is what it is. My family, as it were, is my chosen family. My blood family is still my family. We absolutely still have that relationship that we've worked on.
Right.
But there is, I have so much more in common with
the family you chose.
With the family that I choose and with people within the queer community. Well, yes, that's actually an interesting thing, going from being a lesbian to being pretty much a straight dude in the queer community. Because there are people that don't necessarily want me there anymore.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There are people that think that I'm a gay dude and come flirt with me. And I tell them I'm not interested, and they don't care, and they think it's cute, and they think it's funny. And then I tell them that I don't have a penis, and then they get really offended. And suddenly I'm a tranny trap. And I've lied to them.
So there is hate within the community itself.
Oh my god, yeah.
Really?
And that's a really funny thing that I really appreciated the new season of Queer Eye. Kind of touched on it.
Yep.
Because they show trans growth, which actually I was talking about earlier today that I appreciated. Because so many people assume that the LGBTQ community is one very happy umbrella, and that's not the case.
Right.
There are lots of people that think that the T shouldn't belong at all. There are lots of people that think that the Q is offensive. Like, there's still lots of cis white man problems in the gay community.
Really?
Well, because it's still cis white men that have been a slight bit oppressed, and so now they've got a big chip on their shoulder about it. So lesbians are tolerated, bisexuals are erased, and trans people are glorified and put on a weird fetishizing pedestal at the best worst, and at the worst worst, you know, hate crimed by our own people.
Really? Wow. You are opening my eyes right now. Like, this is crazy. Like, wow. Okay. So then, who do you find the most support from then? Like, do you, since there is like this really strong, for the lack of a better word, majority in the LGBT community that's like kind of oppressive in some ways to the T and the Q in so many ways. Do you find support outside of that? Do you find support just within?
It's not necessarily a majority. It's a loud faction, of course, because it's always a loud faction that's
helpful.
I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to my relationship with myself has never been better.
Right.
And I am learning to make a home within myself and within my soul. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, without negating any and every other support that is necessary from my friends, I am very much the nest that I come home to.
Yeah.
Which is a first, and it's very beautiful to have that for myself finally.
Yeah.
But that's also why I am actually very open on Facebook and about my good days and my bad days.
Right.
And I never try to be a martyr, but I'll be more open about some negative interactions when they do happen. But it's because a part of me building a sturdy nest is knowing that I do have support surrounded by me, because
mm-hmm.
I was watching a great comedy special recently on Netflix, Nanette.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about Nanette isn't the comedian, I forget the comedian's name, Hannah something. She's a lesbian and talks about internalized homophobia, which I really appreciate because it doesn't get talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't grow up with a really positive transmasculine narrative.
Right.
There is still absolutely a part of me within myself that's like transphobic towards me.
Really?
Oh, like there are... I'm not a very sexual person as is, but like I'm a dude without a dick.
Mm-hmm.
That can make me really insecure with partners.
Right.
And so I do a very good job, I like to think, to not take my insecurities out on other people and
mm-hmm.
to not make other people deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
However, it can still make me very mean to myself.
Really?
Especially when like I am surrounded by this, because I work in Boys Town. And so I'm surrounded by gay men, and there's such this obsession with dick.
Yeah.
And I mean, another word for dick is manhood.
Mm.
There's so much to masculinity and to being a man tied to it.
Right.
And so I have to know a lot of times that when I'm saying mean things in my head, those are coming from my head, and that's not coming from my support system.
Like you love yourself every day?
I feel like I love myself every day. I feel like there are some days I am much kinder to myself than others.
There you go. Okay.
I will say before coming out as trans, I cannot pinpoint one day where I love myself.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Has it changed when you wake up in the morning, the feeling you get when you wake up? What was it prior to coming out, and what is it today?
So most of my life I was horrifically depressed and pretty suicidal.
Okay.
Which is funny now, because most people that know me, I'm a very, very positive person. And it's why I'm a positive person, not necessarily a happy one.
Hmm.
But I mentioned that death has been involved a lot with my life. That started from my birth. So my parents had my sister, happy baby, had my brother, who died the next day, had my mom had 3 miscarriages, and then she had me.
Mm.
And I was told this in like third grade.
What?
I mean, it was one of those, it kind of made sense. I was old enough to understand the concepts, and it was family stuff, because like we released a balloon every day on my brother's birthday.
Mm.
And clearly, like my parents, my whole family, they live in the suburbs of Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
Everything's on a facade.
Yeah.
Like they sweep things under the rug.
Right.
And so for me, what it did to me is that it gave me a very, what I called, a John the Baptist complex, where
mm-hmm.
I felt like David, my brother, and these 3 miscarriages, like, cleared the way, and so I had to be so important. So I spent probably from middle school up until the age of 25 on and off, especially the ages 23 to 25, really fucking suicidal. Waking up and going through the days, not because I wanted to wake up. Oh, I, every day. I didn't want to die. I just wanted to not have to deal anymore.
Mm.
But I made a promise to myself that I would never make my parents bury another child. And I kept my promise. And there were so many days that was the only reason. Mm-hmm.
So being suicidal, feeling like you're different, a lot of people that don't understand say it's a choice. Like this is a choice you make or whatever, you know, like
being trans,
being gay, everything, all
sure.
these things are like, no, you chose this, you know, because they don't understand better. They don't get it, you know?
Sure.
I'm sure you got that a lot from a lot of people, like, you
sure.
know? How do you respond to them? How do you tell them? How do you explain to them? Do you not explain to them?
It's finding the people that are worth responding to.
Okay.
There are people that speak from a place of legitimate ignorance in the sense of not knowing and want to know. And so I will take the time to explain to them. There are people that are ignorant and I will attempt to explain and they're clearly content with their ignorance and so I will disengage.
Yep.
And then there are people that are stubborn in their ignorance and say, you know, remember their biology that was taught to them by a football coach, if they had the biology in high school that I had, that just talks about X and Y chromosomes and it's black and white, it's that simple.
Yeah.
And that's not factually true,
no.
But I know the people that it's worth. The best phrase that I heard someone say is, you can roll around in the mud with a pig all you want, but eventually you're going to realize that the pig likes it. And there are some times when I just realize I can debate with you and I can try to educate you, but at the end of the day, you're just going to be happy that you're getting me riled up and you're just going to be happy to
give you satisfaction.
Yeah, like you just want to rock the boat. You're not actually looking for, and this happens on both sides. There are also people that are like, it's not a strictly conservative or a strictly straight thing. There are people that purely want to rock a boat and don't care about the results of it, and I am not that person.
Yeah.
And so I try not to think of them as battles. I pick my conversations.
There we go.
I don't believe in conflict. I believe in confrontation. I believe in conversation.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Moving on to a happier question, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Have you been in love recently? Are you in love right now?
No. So funny story.
There we go.
Actually, it was beautiful. I fell in love for the very first time. I met someone like the week before I started T. We were just gonna be fuck buddies because we met on Tinder. She was in her last year of med school, and I was like, "Great, I'm transitioning, and I like am starting a relationship with myself, and I don't want to start it with someone else." Spoiler alert: we fell in love, and it was wonderful and terrible because she moved to go to California to do her residency at Stanford.
That's awesome.
So I'm not even mad.
No.
I'm still so proud of her. Jackie Wang, you'll never hear this podcast, but I'm so proud of her.
Maybe she will, and you know.
It's true. You never know.
Never know.
I got myself in a sticky situation recently. So I'm a hopeless romantic and also super, super, super picky because I like people that are smarter than me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm egotistical in my intelligence.
Mm.
I can admit.
Yep.
Growing up, my sister was the pretty one and I was the smart one.
Mm, yeah.
But I find someone who's a little bit smarter than me really sexy.
Mm.
And I met someone who is smarter than me at Electric Forest. But this person has a boyfriend of 4 years.
Ooh.
And this person is also very attracted to me. Thankfully, they live not in Chicago.
Okay.
And we both are intelligent, emotionally responsible people. And so we are choosing not. We are trying. No, we're choosing not. We're choosing not. Strong choice.
Choice.
But
maybe.
No, like I have been put in the home wrecking situation so many times and I've said no every time.
Awesome.
They're sexually open, but not romantically open. However, like testing those waters because I'm not going to be a mistress. I'm not going to do it.
No.
I hadn't really felt attracted to a person in that sense of like, oh, like I want to date you hard, because that's more exciting to me than I want to fuck you.
Yeah.
If I want to date someone, that's thrilling to me because that never happens.
Yep.
And so even though with this particular individual, it's not going to work out, it was really exciting to feel that because I hadn't since Jackie, who left. And there, especially after first love, there is this sense of like, I'm never going to
find love again.
Right,
I was in the same boat.
Oh,
so
because you've never felt it before.
Exactly.
It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And you intellectually know that it's dumb.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's like for hopeless romantics, like you, that feeling of love's like, am I ever going to feel that again? And every time that something comes close, you push them away because you're scared about it, you know? And
it's just, it's such a nice feeling.
It's beautiful.
It's,
yeah.
So, I have felt love. I have never been so in love with myself, and that's an incredible thing.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm done my last couple of questions.
Cool.
So what is the dream for Charlie Baker now? having gone through the life that you've had, to coming out, to having top surgery in the next couple months, you know, this awesome transitioning, what is your life stream now?
I mean, I think the certainly a plan at the moment is by 2020, if I am not supporting myself via art and my own volition, to leave Chicago, because I am much more of a nomadic person. But I am not someone that makes a five-year plan. I discovered in my last performance gig that I really miss doing circusy things. Top surgery is going to take me out of doing movement stuff for a while. However, I can use that time to write a lot. And so hopefully moving forward, the plan is to, with the circus vaudeville troupe I've started and with myself, to tour and to do circus shows, cabaret and burlesque shows, and then also for myself to do one-person shows that are a mix of like music and it's education through a personal lens. And so it's kind of stuff like this, but just me questioning myself. Because the weird, something that's never really talked about in coming out is that coming out is not one thing. Like something that I always forget now is I forget that people don't know that I'm trans. Because I know that I'm trans, and to me, especially because I haven't had top surgery, it's really obvious that I'm trans. And so it's a constant process. And so I don't intend on, quote, going stealth, which is transitioning and then just choosing to live quietly as a man and only letting people know that I choose to. Because no positive narrative was available to me growing up, I feel like it is very important for myself to provide that narrative. So the plan moving forward is whatever I do, do it publicly, do it loudly, and live a life that would make little 7-year-old me proud.
Last question. This is something I've always wanted to ask. If you were to write an autobiography for yourself, or someone was to write one for you, what would the title of that autobiography be? Just based on the life that you've had and the life that you want to have, if you were able to live everything you want to do, what would it be?
I mean, honestly, I feel like I just have to go with "When I Was a Lesbian in Oklahoma."
That's good.
The funny thing is, I'm a game that I play with myself is I make autobiographical titles all the time.
Really?
That's the only one that's in my brain right now, though.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank you for joining me, Charlie. This was awesome.
Thank
this
was
so great.
This was fun.
I'm glad we had this conversation and we dipped and dived through emotions and stories, and I really learned a lot, and I'm sure all our listeners did too. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Charlie Baker, and they have now successfully had top surgery, and it's been inspiring following them online and listening and hearing about their story. Thank you for listening in to another episode of What Is. I hope you enjoyed it, and stay tuned for the next episode, which will be another awesome story about coming out. Bye.